This is Kelly Rollins, and I'm interviewing Renee Flesher at her home in Pensacola, Florida, on March 26, 1996. I'm speaking with her about her career in the Army. Okay, I'm going to get a little bit of background information on you. Where were you born?
Okay, I was born in Buffalo, New York.
And your parents' names?
My mother was Edna Rose, her maiden name was Fernandez, and her married name Kuczynski, and my dad was Roman Walter Kuczynski.
And how much education do you have?
I have my master's degree from Jack State.
Okay. What kind of jobs have you had in the past?
Basically, if you name it, and it's been administration or personnel, I've done it. Stay away from the medical field. You can't stand a set of blood, and don't have any mechanical aptitude, so I stay away from those two. But my strengths are clearly management organization, and most of my jobs have been in the personnel management that field. And of course, I went to counseling from there, which is very closely related to that.
Is there anything major in your life that you think that stands out in particular?
Well, I think the very purpose of this interview, Kelly, I think it's significant that a female spends 22 years in the military and holds her own in a predominantly male environment, attains rank of EA, and holds some of the positions that I've held, which initially people said, oh, I'd never get that high, I'd never get a position like that, women didn't do that, and sure enough, I was able to attain them.
You were in the Army for a good many years. What encouraged you to join?
To be really honest, Kelly, everybody told me not to, and I couldn't stand anyone telling me not to do something. That's kind of my standard joke. Plus, it was during Vietnam, and the guys were getting all drafted, and I said, well, I might as well go where the guys go. That was my standard line number two. But the reality was, it was a way to travel, get some education, have a paycheck, not have to work for minimum wage someplace, way to get away from home, gain my own autonomy, kind of have everything all at one time. I didn't have to wait for anything. So that was kind of the real motivation.
Would you ever, if you had a chance to do it ever, would you join again?
In a minute. Of course, it's not the same organization as it is today as it was then. I don't like it as much today as it is today. But yeah, for the experience and the benefits and the camaraderie and the travel, the education I got through, sure, I'd do it again.
How were women treated in the military? Were they treated different than men?
Well, it was one of the places you could go where they claimed that there was a lot of equality between the sexes. And while it's true you had the same basic pay, that's kind of where a lot of the differences stopped and started. Of course, our training was a lot different. The requirements were a lot different. The amount of clothing allowance we got was different. The type of jobs we could have was different. So there was a lot of disparity between men and women in service at that time. Talking about recollections and how things started, Kelly, and since I spent so much time in the military and have followed the women's movement back for many, many years, it makes me think of the stories you read in history books. We hear all about the women and the contribution, and you hear a lot about Rosie the Riveter, and you also hear how they met the demands of the country and how wonderful it was, and at the same time, almost the same paragraph, you find that they make these accusations that once they get out of the kitchen, they didn't want to go back. Well, of course, the men in our society didn't like that either. So you kind of get complimented and slam dunked at the same time. And of course, I'm real happy and pleased that we didn't get forced back into the kitchen yet and have to stay there. So a lot has changed for women just in my lifetime.
When you joined the Army, did your parents have a hard time taking that? Were they upset with you because you decided to join?
They had a little bit of a difficult time. I had to really track my father down and stand him to get to sign the parents' consent. Mother always claimed she would have liked to have joined the military, but her parents wouldn't sign for her. So she had a little bit more understanding of my desire to go. Of course, she was obviously concerned. You hear stories now, just as you did then, about all women in the military are lesbians. They're never going to amount to nothing. You leave home, they're going to associate with people who are not in their either social class or cultural background, and the normal concerns that parents have, and the fact that they have absolutely no control over it because you're not home. So they have the normal concerns, but fortunately they were supportive of my decision to do it. They understood what my goals were, hopes and my aspirations, and they chose not to stay in my way. Well, of course, they couldn't afford to even assist with college or anything, so it's not that they could have offered me anything. It's a lure to stay home and do anything different. And, they also realized you don't have to just graduate and get married, like my mother's generation did. So, unfortunately, they encouraged it, was the bottom line. After a little, you know, convincing.
Tell me a little bit about the Women's Army Corps. What was it like?
Well, when I first joined the military, some discrepancies to start with. Maybe if your parents' consent, of course, well, men did too, but men could go in without parents' consent. At 18, the women needed parents' consent all the way to age 21. That was one difference right off the bat. You were very, very limited as to the jobs you could go into. Basically, the very typical standard female jobs, administration, personnel. Occasionally, they talked about openings in some of the computer sciences, which was a new field at that time. Some things in supply. Certainly nothing non-traditional, nothing mechanical. So you were very, very limited as to what you could go in for. Once you qualified also, you had no more further contact with the recruiter other than phone calls until the day that you left. You couldn't actually sign any papers. You couldn't make a commitment until the day you left the basic training. Men could sign up and pick their job and have written guarantees from the time they qualified, and women couldn't do that because they couldn't hold a reserve status at that time. So you felt like you were kind of in limbo until the day you left, and kind of anxious up to the day you went on to leave and hope everything was still there that you wanted and the promise, because it's not been written. And you wanted to last minute, so got to find a way to qualify you if something's going to go wrong. And of course, they just kind of assumed when we were always going to change your mind, too, so that they were saved a lot of trouble. So I'm not sure what the actual federal regulations were at the time. I just knew that we could not actually enlist until the day we went for basic training. And that, in the long run, affected our pay, because you get longevity pay for length of service, which would start the day you enlist. And of course, we didn't have the option of enlisting up to a year early like the men did.
Did that cause a lot of animosity between the men and women, because they would get to have their pay while they were there?
Well, so you don't get pay. Longevity pay doesn't come until after you're in the military for 2 years, so that's not something that the average recruit would particularly think about. And I'm not even sure that you're aware of that. At that point, I know I wasn't, and I realized that men could and women couldn't, but I didn't have any idea what the long-term effects of that could be. So there it wasn't. Nothing about that then, because you wouldn't notice that for at least 2 years.
Tell me about some of the job opportunities that you had while you were in the military, like that they offered women and men.
Like I said, when I first started, Kelly, we had very, very few openings, and most of them were very typical. And while they boasted like over 200 jobs at the time, the vast majority of them were only for men, not women. And women initially had the food service, medical, administrative positions. One thing that changed later on, just to jump ahead a little bit, while I was in recruiting duty during the 70s, there was this roll on women's lip thing going on. And at that time, for almost 2 solid years in recruiting duty, we could not find a traditional school seat for women. All the clerical personnel, medical food service jobs, they were all for men. The only thing they had available for women was mechanics, generator mechanics, things dealing with the hookers, missile things that women would never think, the typical women would never think of going into. And my sentiment was, if they want traditional jobs, let them have them. But if they want to be a mechanic, let them be a mechanic. Of course, there was just a whole reversal in the 70s to what it was in the late 60s. I saw a tremendous change with the job opportunities, the number and types of jobs open to women during 2 decades plus that I was in the military. And of course, in recruiting is when I noticed it the most.
When you first went in, what was your job?
I enlisted initially as a clerk typist. I remember very vividly the first school that I went to. In fact, I'll back up just a little bit, Kelly, because I joined the Army, so I was really tired of going to school anyway. And all we did is sit in school day in and day out in basic training. It's like I didn't join the Army to sit in this classroom, but there was a lot of academic situations in basic training, more than I anticipated. Now I forgot your original question.
What did you do first?
First typist, and it was really not a very big choice at all. It was basic school, you know, this and clerk typist. We went to basic and then to clerk typing school, and both of them were at Fulton Colon, Alabama at that time. And I can remember spending literally 8 hours a day typing. I'm the only manual typer, and this was like pre-electric, pre-computer, to the point that at night when I'd lay in bed, my fingers would just move automatically. The tendons would just be jumping up from all that keystroking, all in literally 8 hours a day, day after day after day. But I certainly learned how to type.
How long did you do the clerical?
I did the clerical job for probably about 2 years, and then I decided my first assignment was in Chicago. And I said I had joined the Army to travel, and I still hadn't been west of the Mississippi River, so I had an opportunity to put in for a reassignment and went to California. And when I got out there, I started to work as a personnel clerk. And basically, once you're a clerk, you can branch off into almost any specialty that has to do with administration. And I work with compassionate reassignments, so I had to deal with everybody with family problems and deaths and sicknesses and whatnot, helping them get their paperwork together to get reassigned. So it's kind of a depressing job, mm-hmm. but at least it was expanding my horizons a little bit, and I got to see some more of the country and to learn some more information there.
How did they recruit the women? What did they use to appeal to women when they wanted to get them into the Army?
They didn't have to do a whole lot, Kelly, because the number of women in the military at that time were capped at about 3%, and if you can imagine how big the numbers are in the overall services, 3% is not very many women. They didn't have recruiters out there, and when they spoke to schools, they didn't discourage you, but they didn't have to particularly go out and find you either. Enlistment eligibility for women has always been considerably higher for men, too. And another problem of weight would discriminate, would eliminate a lot of women to start with, too. So between test scores and weight. And of course, you had two women who only talked about going in to get their boyfriends to propose and get wedding rings and all that kind of stuff. But they didn't really need to put a lot of effort into it. If there was a draw at all, it was the same for the man, the travel opportunities, the educational opportunities, and yeah, they were there. And, of course, at that time, femininity was still stressed, so you were still allowed to be a female, encouraged, in fact, required to have a feminine appearance at that time. So they didn't have to do a lot of recruiting effort for that.
What women to act and how they want them to dress and everything when they were in the Army?
Basically, if you can believe this, Kelly, and this was back in the 60s, on any military base, male or female, regardless, weren't even allowed to wear blue jeans. Blue jeans were taboo in society. They had some really negative connotations. I can't even remember what they are now. I just knew that blue jeans were prohibited on military bases. Women were not allowed to wear any type of uniforms that had slacks. We had to wear a skirt all the time. Every time we even had a break of more than 15 minutes, the skirts had to be pressed. And we had to have 35 women, one ironing board, and two hot irons going and try and get everybody done and out in what was supposed to have been a break from the classroom. That didn't make a lot of sense to me. Even when we went on bivouac, they gave us fatigues about 30 minutes before we left, and we could put them on, and we had to have them off and return within 30 minutes of the time we got back. The bad part about that is when we went on our bivouac, and bivouac was an experience that we might want to talk a little about too, because that has changed a lot also. Our fatigues got wet the first night out. Of course, we only had one set. It was only a short bivouac. We had no clean or dry uniforms to put on the next day, so we had to get up and get into these cold, wet uniforms the next day to start. And now, if it was men, they didn't have several sets given to them, but we only had them for a few hours, and that was all we were allowed to wear, and we had to have them off, and we couldn't be seen anywhere without them.
What were the different training that they used on women? Did they use different training for women than they did for men?
Oh, yeah, because the training was really completely different, completely separate. One of the things that came to mind right away was women were not only not required to do weapons training, but we were just not authorized to touch a weapon at all. In fact, as late as the early 70s, when I was at the Noncommissioned Officers Academy, I had to use a broomstick, literally, when they were doing the weapons drill. I felt kind of foolish. I was the only girl in a class of 70 guys, and I refused to ask for exception one. And there was no choice. I had to use this broomstick. Well, I had found someone willing to let me use a weapon and actually perform the exercises with it. And both that individual and I got into very serious trouble at that time. Of course, later on it changed. Women could request to use a weapon, and little by little it came to where they had to. And then, of course, at some point it was just part of regular training.
How come they didn't want women to use the weapons?
I think part of that was just the social ideology that, you know, women were supposed to be the nurturers and men warriors. I had no idea what the army regulations were at the time. I wasn't into those particular acts. But that was pretty symbolic of how our society felt. You know, it was okay if women were in there in support roles, but they didn't want us into anything that was even remotely combative. So that was probably how that came about.